Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
O'clock on Grant and Danny. Thanks, as always, to Pete Medhurst for keeping us up to date on all things sports. Quick reminder, Kirk Cousins, me, and Danny, special season recap. Interview, January 5th. Friday at noon, that is this week. Tickets are still available. Every penny raised is going to a charity. Kirk chose the D.C. Dream Center. We will talk about his future, whether or not he plans on signing with the Washington Redskins, how he's feeling at the end of the campaign. More importantly, you guys can ask questions. We'll have a mic set up for listener questions. Cousins wanted to take questions from you guys, so that is what we are doing. JamminJava.com for tickets. Jerry Brewer, The Washington Post, is our favorite columnist who writes about the Redskins in town, and he joins us now. Jerry, let's start with your piece on the injuries. Yesterday, Jay Gruden was asked a lot about the number of injuries the Redskins had this season and what the team can do to clean that part of their operation up moving forward. And I know you wrote about this. What do you think can be done, and what needs to be put under the microscope here?
Well, I think the basic thing is, even though you're not going to fire anybody and you're not going to find a quote-unquote smoking gun, you do need to look at everything you're doing and see if you can do it 5, 10, 15% better. And there were some issues that came up. DJ Swearinger said he didn't think that guys were diligent enough about preventive care, and that's something that Jay Gruden shouldn't just brush off. He should take it seriously and take a look at it and maybe scrutinize his guys a little more. When you look at the injuries that they had, they were such significant injuries and so varied that I don't think you're going to look at it and say that they just did something egregiously wrong. But are they doing things up to the best possible standards? That's a question they're going to have to ask themselves. I do believe that they need to take a look again about how they bring guys back from injuries. You know, when a guy first gets diagnosed with an injury, like with Jordan Reed and his toe situation, did you let him come back too soon? I have a hard time believing that there wasn't something they could have done on the front end that would have given them more opportunities to have him later in the season, but they were so desperate to get him back on the field in September that they kind of forgot that it could cost them November and December. The other thing I think is you really have to be careful about the risk you take with guys who have an injury history, either through the draft or in trying to get guys who are bargains in free agency. And you have to really define what's the difference between a guy who just has happened to get hurt. What's the difference with a guy who is someone whose body is young and they were just inevitably going to have to go through some things? And what's the guy who is just an injury-prone dude and stay away from them? So they're more maybe on the highbrow end of things, but it's something that they have to do. They can't just say, oh, we were incredibly unlucky, because I've seen too many times where teams just brush it off as, oh, that's football, that happens, and then what happens? The same thing happens to you the next year, and then it becomes a trend. It's not just some aberration. It's not Murphy's Law. Then it's a problem that you have to address.
Yeah, Jerry, I think there's a middle ground here, because skeptics on either side, someone that says, hey, it was just bad luck, will point to Chris Thompson. He got rolled up on and hurt himself that way. Rob Kelly, sprained an MCL on a contact play. So you just sort of dismiss it. Others will say, hey, wait a minute, on the other side, they just did such a terrible job of preventative care, as you kind of allude to, or mismanaged guys like Trent Williams, Jordan Reed, et cetera. I do think there's a middle ground here where there absolutely is room for improvement. I, of course, am not medically trained. I don't know anything. I just know that they had major problems, and it just sort of seemed to, you know, surprise the heck out of them every time it didn't work out. Like, I think they were stunned that Jordan Reed wasn't effective over the course of this year. Not much forward thinking there.
Yeah, I agree, Danny. There is a middle ground. And I think you have to look at everything and you have to say, we have to do as much as we can on our end to make sure this doesn't happen. This franchise is bad about what I call, the hidden costs, the things that aren't going to cost you against the cap or anything, but they don't want to invest in them. And maybe there's just some extra techniques that you need to have, or maybe there's some different things and exercises that you can do, or being able to allow your staff to go to this convention that maybe they haven't gone to in the past. All those things, every little thing matters. Once again, I talk about this in baseball a lot, but it applies to football as well. 2% better can get you so many more victories than what you imagine. You think about it and you think, oh, that's no big deal. But the accumulation of things that are no big deal adds to something significant always in football.
Jerry Brewer on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. The column you wrote before the injury piece was on the polarizing and unending Kirk Cousins debate. And as you said, it got fresh fuel with the season finale dud. Jay Gruden yesterday was asked about Cousins' performance. By not commenting positively or commending Cousins in the same tone that he did all season long, he sent headlines that really were talked about all over the country. What did you make of his answer, which was lukewarm and tepid on Cousins as his quarterback?
Well, for one, I was disappointed in Jay. I don't think he thought going into the press conference enough about, there are going to be four or five things you say that make headlines, and you really needed to think over everything you say about Kirk Cousins because it's going to be scrutinized like crazy. I don't think he gave him enough credit for some of the things he did, just making things happen out of nothing, something that is not considered to be a strength for Kirk. And you can tell that he didn't think a lot about this because he went to the lowest common denominator of quarterback wins. Quarterback always gets way too much credit regardless of what their numbers are when they win a game, and they get way too much blame when they lose. And Jay played the sort of lazy narrative of, he went 7-9 and we're 24-23-1 over the last three seasons. No quarterback can say that he had a good year with that kind of record. Yes and no. I mean, let's not forget that the general trend over those 3 years is that they've had a bottom five defense and they've had a bottom 10 running game. So a lot has been put on the arm of that quarterback. And if he did not play well, I mean, Kirk has played some B level, right? Let's say he's played at like 84 out of 100. If he did not play at 84 out of 100, your 24-23-1 record over 3 years would be well below 500. So I think you just can't say and put that on him and say, we're just a 500-ish team and put that blame on him without considering all the other factors. And I think that's one thing that Jay, while there was a lot of truth to some of the things that he said, I think the strongest message that he sent about Kirk was, we're mediocre, and it intimated that he had to accept too much blame for that. The quarterback had to accept too much blame for that. And I don't think that's the way that he meant it to come across. But again, when you've been a head coach for four seasons, you should know that something like this is coming and you should have a better answer.
I agree with you 1,000%. It's what we were talking about really at the start of the show today. We joke about quarterback wins and losses and what an antiquated, ridiculous metric that is. And you got guys on television like Herm Edwards who scream about winning the game. And I hate that. I think it's bad and it kind of dumbs it down for everyone. But I can tolerate that from someone who's buying a hot dog in the upper tier. Head coach has got to do better. And I thought he took the really easy way out there rather than pointing out, look, he's handing the ball off to LaShawn Daniels and Capri Bibbs and Ryan Quicks catching the football and Jeremy Sprinkle. He really stepped forward this year, extending plays. He didn't really give him any of the credit he did all year long, and I thought really it was the beginning of the negotiation at the podium.
Yeah, there was very much a vibe of they recognize how possible it is that they're going to have to move on, and you need to keep people from panicking about what they have left over. There was very much a vibe of that. And that doesn't bode well for people who would like to see some continuity.
Jerry, you also wrote, by the way, how are your wrists and fingers? Three columns in a week, man. You got to be taking some time off here after a little
carpal
bit.
Carpal tunnel syndrome.
It is a risk. You got to take care of the body, preventative care. But he also wrote about what they're building towards. And I think this all centers in on this debate with Kirk Cousins. And I don't know the answer because everyone in Ashburn loves to tell us or like get the word out of how close they are and how good the feeling is and everything else. And I look up and go, I feel like they're kind of treading water here in this sort of 8-8 range with all the one-year deals and uncertainty at the quarterback spot, et cetera. What are they building towards at this point, especially with this huge question of the most important position still up in the air again?
Danny, my fear is that they have just figured out a way not to be a disaster, that they figured out a way to avoid 3, 4, and 5 wins. And if you acquire these kind of players and you do these sort of things, you'll always have an opportunity at 7, 8, 9 victories. If you get lucky, maybe you get 10. That's just not the way to go. And I don't think that's the way that Gruden definitely intends for it to go. And I don't think that's the way that Scott McLuhan was trying to build this thing. But I think that number one, you should never like the whole, one of the key points of this entire building is when you find talent, you keep talent. When you find guys who are good players, you don't let them leave the building. And they're most likely to let their quarterback leave the building. So there's a big X there. And another thing is you want as many solid guys, you know, as McLuhan used to call them, just good football players. But you got to be able to take the right calculated risk for big talent. And they have not had enough home runs. I mean, they've had plenty of singles. Their batting average is higher. But they really need to get, you know, they need to have a roster where it's got, where you can name 12 guys who have a chance, at least a chance, to go to the Pro Bowl every year. And they probably have 4 or 5 guys like that on the team. So while their depth is better and while they don't have as many holes on the roster, you're going to win with extraordinary talent. And their talent is just pretty good right now. So that's a couple of areas. And so, again, the overall theme, I think, is if you can go, you can win 7 and 8 games this way and keep your season interesting and it doesn't affect your bottom line too much, you're probably not going to take a bigger swing. And that's my concern, not necessarily from the guys who are building the team, but from Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen, that maybe they need to look at themselves and say, have we gotten a little complacent on at least taking the big swings and doing the things you need to do to finish off an effort? Because I'm not going to use the word rebuilding anymore. They're not rebuilding. Jay's been here 4 years. They've been doing this plan that McLuhan started. This will be the 4th offseason. You're not rebuilding anymore. You are what the results say you are. And right now I don't look at them and see a team that I see a clear pathway to 10 or 11 wins next season to contending legitimately in the division.
Jerry Brewer on Grant and Danny. Check him out in the Washington Post. A thoughtful and a wonderful columnist here in town on the Redskins and all things DC sports. We appreciate you, Jerry. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Jerry.
Anytime.
Want to get into his comments. Said he was disappointed in what Jay Gruden said yesterday. Strong take from Jerry Brewer. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny. I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is The Fan. We're on Twitter at Grant H. Paulson for me.
I am at Funny Danny.
Jerry Brewer was just on the show from the Washington Post. We asked Jerry what he thought about Jay Gruden's lukewarm response when asked about Kirk Cousins' season. Here's what Brewer said.
Well, for one, I was disappointed in Jay. I don't think he thought going into the press conference enough about, you know, there are going to be 4 or 5 things you say that make headlines, and you really needed to think over everything you say about Kirk Cousins because it's going to be scrutinized like crazy. I don't think he gave him enough credit for some of the things he did, just making things happen out of nothing, something that is not considered to be a strength for Kirk.
Interesting take from a guy who's probably the most respected columnist on the Redskins in town. Jay Gruden did not prepare enough and or expect the questions necessary on Kirk Cousins. So here's my response to that, because I think Brewer is correct in that he didn't do a good job answering the question. It is an impossibility to me that Jay Gruden didn't know the question was coming. I'm walking out to the podium a day after the season press conference. The number one topic on every reporter's mind is Kirk Cousins. I know that. He's got a PR director in Tony Wiley who's a decorated past. He was winning awards before he came here in Houston for preparing his coaches on how and what to say and his players on how to handle the media. There is no chance that the Redskins didn't know that Cousins' questions were coming. But to Jerry Brewer's point, I think correctly, there's a few things that if you say them or don't say them are going to make national headlines, and that's where we are. Look around at the different sites.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what your sports blog of choice is. I love For the Win or The Big Lead. They got stories about what Jay Gruden said or, and maybe more importantly, didn't say about Kirk Cousins yesterday. ESPN.com, John Keim wrote a piece nationally getting clicked all over the place about Jay Gruden's comments on Kirk Cousins. There's a few things basically to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way where you just kind of do the compliment, get it over with, move along, and nothing to see here. I think everyone kind of expected that, and because it didn't happen, it's a story.
It is, and so much as this saga is happening again, and Jerry wrote about this in his previous column, where we're here again, and we've gone over who's to blame and why and how we got here. Everybody knows the etymology. Everyone knows the story. Everyone knows everything about it, so I won't go into it, but you know it, okay? So we're here again where it's a, what are they going to do? Are they going to transition, franchise, long term, let him walk? We've done this dance, and the fact that we're here again now means everything is going to be scrutinized because this, there's a reason for this. It does not happen in this sport, this position. Other positions, it does happen where a middle linebacker gets too expensive, an outside pass rusher gets too expensive, even though that's very rare. A guy who can play at a Pro Bowl level usually doesn't leave. Josh Norman was a major story because that doesn't happen. A guy was franchise tagged, and then they said, we changed our mind. Not only do we not want you on the franchise tag, we don't want your butt at all. And it's a big sweepstakes, and he leaves town.
It might be the reason why their GM's now in New York, by the way.
There you go. It's a unique situation where this type of thing has never happened before, and everything is going to be scrutinized. So when you've got a set of reality, you've got a list of facts where it's very easy to just, if you regurgitate the facts and go, he had a season that averages his last two with infinitely less to work with.
Right.
Pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, that's all really he would have had to do. You could have just read his numbers and said, yeah, here's where he ranked in the NFL in
seventh,
this category.
Seventh in passing yards. He was, you know, whatever, his ninth or tenth in touchdowns. 31 total touchdowns ranked him. And then this. And then the quarterback rating. And then you combine over 48 starts over the guys at the same stretch. There are four guys that have a better quarterback rating. His worst quarterback ratings came against the Giants. We got to get that fixed. If you just regurgitate the information that we all have
just,
at our disposal.
Just say facts.
Everyone's like, yeah, cool. But the fact that it was so.
That's what I would do, by the way, if I was a coach. I would just recite numbers all the time. Basically, I'd give less opinions and takes because it's harder to parse it up. What'd you think of Kirk Cousins this year? Well, I liked what I saw. I think he can get better. Here's where he ranked. And just go through the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to take out of that? Let's go to Chris in D.C. on the Fan. What's up, Chris?
What's up, fellas? Well, you know me. I like being factual. You're right. If I was Jay Gruden, I would say, you know, under Kirk Cousins, I would be factual. I would like... We're 25-27-1 with an 0-1 with an 0-1 play playoff record. Since he's been here, we've only beaten three teams that went to the playoff teams. That's since he's been here as well. He's never been voted to a All Pro. He's never been a Pro. He's been voted to a Pro Bowler, a Pro Bowl. He's never been an All Pro.
He was a Pro Bowler.
No. I mean, if you don't get voted in, he was never voted. He was never.
Oh, okay.
Voted.
So now it matters if you've got voted in or not. I got you.
I mean, Grant, you might not believe this, but your agent can't say you were a Pro Bowler if you was never voted in. It only counts if you're voted in.
That's not correct.
Guys get to go to the Pro Bowl, they're Pro Bowlers. But that's semantics.
You've also routinely discussed guys as Pro Bowlers in the past who came to the Pro Bowl based on being alternates. But you can use whichever argument you need to get through the call.
Okay, but like I said before, let's use fact. I mean, like this. I mean, a lot of narratives were answered. I mean, back in the day, everyone used to say that Cousins, because he didn't take sacks because he got rid of the ball, so it was, had nothing to do with the offensive line because he knew where to go with the ball. But as we saw, once the offensive line went down, 41 sacks, four or five fumbles later, you know, things didn't go as well. I mean, we just – we can't – I just feel like this. I know Cousins will put up great statistical numbers against teams that are not very good, are not playoff-bound teams. I know for a fact that when we need him the most against teams and our season on the line, especially the last five.
But what about the good teams that he played real well against
like
this
Minnesota,
year? Minnesota, they hung 30. He was great. New Orleans, 56 minutes, they beat the Saints. Kansas City, Josh Doctson catches a pass. He's got three touchdowns, no picks, and a win over a team in the playoffs. What about those games?
Well, let's be honest. Minnesota game, you only scored 23. I mean, Swearinger turned the ball to the one-yard line. So, I mean, that was kind of easy right there. I mean, there were nine games where we scored 20 points or less, and we only scored over 31 points one time. That was against
the Saints.
Scored
33 times. What's the difference? Thanks for the call. Appreciate you. It's going to be a long offseason with Chris in D.C.
So, my least favorite thing, he does a lot of things that are my least favorite, actually. It's all kind of a tie.
I've got about eight least favorite things that he does.
But it's the
most of which are not use any facts.
Well, but they're it's bits of information, but obviously through
but
this
most
weird
of the time they're incorrect bits
kaleidoscope
of
lenses.
Yes.
Well, but here's what I'll say. He performs well against worse teams. Has anyone ever played fantasy football? Don't you understand that you want to start guys against bad defenses? Of course it makes sense you play better against a bad defense than a good one. That's everybody. So Tom Brady performs worse against a good defense. You play against Denver, typically you have a worse game. You play against New Orleans this year, you had a worse game. Usually play against New Orleans, you have a great game. And everybody's it's a must start. Crappy quarterbacks can play well against bad defenses. It's called matchups, for God's sakes. Play a fantasy football game. Play fantasy basketball. Why do you start every time somebody plays against the Phoenix Suns, you start every guard, every small forward? Because you're going to get wide open threes. You hold that against somebody is ludicrous. Of course you play worse against the great defenses in this league.
Especially when they're not on a
defenses.
Good team.
They're great defenses.
Team isn't good. So when they play Minnesota, a really good team, and he throws for 327 yards in a game in which they score 30 points, that was a fine game for Kirk Cousins. Not a bad game because they lost. If you think it's a bad game because they lost, I can't help you. But again, you referenced quarterback wins and losses at the beginning of your call. So really, I shouldn't be wasting this much time discussing this.
Minnesota gives up 15 points a game, and you scored 23 really after an interception or whatever else. Again, it's such a weird.
At New Orleans, throws for 322, three, and no interceptions against a team that a lot of people think is going to the Super Bowl. Okay. I guess that was a bad game, too. The L.A. game, are the Rams any good? I thought they were. Had a 100 quarterback rating in that game, threw for 179 yards, and didn't turn the ball over.
Now, after Chris Thompson went out in that New Orleans game, the offense was worse. They averaged 17 points a game down the stretch. Everybody was worse, including Cousins.
That's, without Jordan Reed, yes, and without Chris Thompson, and without Trent Williams, their offense did get worse.
Yeah, that absolutely
that
happened.
True.
So that is a data point. But to take that as that's the one I'll select. Is silly.
Here are some data points. He ranked in the top half of the league in every single category and ranked in the top 10 in the league in most categories.
Eighth in touchdowns.
Those are my data points.
In yards.
I'll wait for you to counter those. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, for one, I was disappointed in Jay. I don't think he thought going into the press conference enough about now, there are going to be four or five things you say that make headlines, and you really needed to think over everything you say about Kirk Cousins because it's going to be scrutinized like crazy. I don't think he gave him enough credit for some of the things he did, just making things happen out of nothing, something that is not considered to be a strength for Kirk.
Jerry Brewer of the Post, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. It should be noted, by the way, Jay Gruden didn't say anything inaccurate either. He said we were 7-9 and that Kirk Cousins was great at times and was inconsistent at others. I'm not sure if he can get us basically over the top. We know we can be about this with Kirk. The point is, what do you want the Redskins to accomplish early this offseason? If you want to get closer to a deal with Kirk Cousins, then you should have wanted Jay Gruden to say more, which is, I think, where Jerry Brewer is coming from.
Uh-huh.
Their plan should have been kill him with kindness early this offseason. let's bridge this gap a little bit and try to get a deal done. You didn't take a step closer to a deal yesterday. If I'm Kirk Cousins listening to how, again, this is the guy in the building that's my guy, because Bruce isn't. Dan, to a large extent, is not the guy I'm working with day in and day out. Right. So it really doesn't matter if he wants me to come over for dinner at this point or not. I know how he used to feel. I know how he feels now. The guy that I've got to have standing on the table for me with Bruce Allen is Jay Gruden. Didn't sound like he's going to be standing on the table as much as I'd like for him to. Because Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, those guys always talk differently about me. Mike's in Fredericksburg. What's up, Mike?
What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man. Go ahead, you're on, dude.
You're on the radio. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Hey, listen, it sounded to me like Jay felt like the words he was speaking were painful and they weren't his words. As you pointed out, all season, he really pumped up Kirk on the job he was doing. He acknowledged the lack of firepower that Kirk had and still did a great job. And then all of a sudden, he changed his tune, and it felt like it was coming from someone else other than Jay. I'm going to hang up and let you guys talk about it.
Thank you, bud. I think that was, I don't want to say put words in your mouth, Grant, but that was kind of your point this morning in so much as this is less Jay doing his normal thing that we're used to, right, where he's kind of shooting from the hip and he's an aw shucks, just, you know, shucking and jiving with you in the media and telling you, man, is it like pretty good doing his normal thing. And that was more calculated. That wasn't that your
Correct.
Point?
Correct. Now, if his allegation on the phone, though, is that Bruce or Dan came to him and said, hey, here's what we want you to say about Kirk now. I disagree with that. I just think it is common sense that the season is over and you now are not going to say anything until March that is going to give Kirk Cousins any added ammunition and or give the fan base any added ammunition to be angry or disappointed when a deal does not get done. You're in shutdown mode. When I used to be on the beat, we used to laugh at coaches the first week of the season, how they would change. Like Mike Shanahan during training camp in the preseason would pretty much be an open book. He would answer questions. At the podium, he would go on long-winded answers and give you information. And there would be a press conference every single season. A lot of times it was right around cutdown day, or sometimes it was the Monday of the first week of the year where it was, there's the robot again, where it was like the season just began. And we would leave the press conference room and we'd be laughing. I'd look at Jones or Kime and I'd say, well, I guess the regular season is now underway.
I guess it's now started.
Because he's in what we called shutdown mode. You just sit there and you tell stories and everyone sits around pretzel style and you read them books for weeks in the preseason. But as soon as the regular season started, you shut it down. I think this is similar. The regular year, you're kind of talking about your players. Everybody's happy working with everyone. I love Kirk Cousins. He's done a great job. Look at all these injuries we're overcoming together. Now, all of a sudden, I'm Jay Gruden. The season's over. And I got to figure out if I'm going to sign this guy or not. Not to mention, I've got a vote of confidence that I didn't have previously. So maybe now I can say, well, 7-9 is not good enough. And if we got to go with a different direction at quarterback, we can do that. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think he has to play the game the same way he did in the regular year. Jeff in Haymarket, what's up?
Yeah, Grant, Danny, Happy New Year.
You too, bud.
Jay Gruden's a smart guy. And I think he's a Kirk Cousins guy. And I think he was told by Bruce Allen and Snyder, don't go out there and end this year and give him all the praise and give him good figures and do what do what you probably should do. You can't do that. You got to downplay this for me here. We're in the go.
I think we lost you, Jeff.
It's a good call.
Sorry, buddy.
So let me do it this way. The Redskins, I think, if we buy all of this with Jay and sort of like the team messaging and what's smart and what's common sense, what's the end game then? Is it to retain the player for as little as possible, or is it to cushion the blow for when he's not here anymore?
Both. I think the first thing you do is you try to diminish the value a little bit in any negotiation. I go back to the comp. Everyone's got their own from their own work. But I think your boss, when you are under contract and you sign your deal for a year or two, halfway through that contract is going to be more favorable and warm and kind of complimentary than the month before you're about to sign a deal. They're going to spend time reminding you of the little things that you might be able to do differently, or this doesn't always go in your way. I just think that that is natural in business. And I think that is what's happening right now. But what can also be gained, you cannot possibly lose anything – from setting a public face, if you're the Redskins, that we don't need Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins needs us.
Now, it was misguided and bumbled and amateurish and buffoonish and boorish and the height of jackassery. But that's what Bruce Allen was trying to do last year.
They've done it for 3 years. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The butthurt day number one when he flew to Michigan thinking, I'll take Redskins one and I'll handle it, guys. Be right
I'm
back with a
back
QB.
With a signed contract and a long-term deal.
I'm getting this thing done. And he flew out there and had ridiculous terms that weren't market value, that was a 2 years too shy in terms of guaranteed years and probably $40 million in actual guaranteed dollars shy, but then wanted to tell you about how great the offer was. That
this was bull. I'm so mad.
That little press conference you gave, Redskins fans deserve to know where we stand. First of all, we all get it, bro. You're trying to put your own word and your own company line out there to soften the blow for when this all goes bad. You're going to say, it wasn't our fault. We tried really hard. You didn't. You screwed it up, and everybody with half a brain knows it. But that's what that was. And so if we buy that, I think this is way more cushioning the blow for when this doesn't work out, when this is blown up in their face. Because, again, I don't see a path to a long-term deal. I think that ship has sailed. The only thing I could see is them being so afraid of what the truth is for his value that they either franchise tag him or let him walk away. I don't think the reasonable decision, if they had no ego and pride, would be, of course, the transition tag to get the value set and then we can get this thing done or not. To me, they're either going to franchise tag him or let him walk, and that's what this is. This is cushioning the blow for that.
Yeah, I guess for me, my frustration with it was the phrasing that Jerry used was perfect, was just that Jay took the easy way out, what mm-hmm. I call the lowest common denominator. Because you can please so many people that'll clap like seals when you mention the record.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to do is say, we were 7-9. He wasn't good enough. And you get thousands of people going, tell him. Tell him.
It's about wins and losses.
Did you win the game, though? And you got to be smarter. I'm seeing this tweet here from a guy named Jeff Duncan. The Saints finished this year 17th in defense. Here's where they ranked over the last several years. They were 7-9 the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They ranked 27th, 31st, and 31st.
Mm-hmm.
So this year they jumped up 14 spots to 17th from their average over the last 3 years. They are now a NFC juggernaut and a potential Super Bowl team. Did Drew Brees get a lot better this year? No, in fact, Drew Brees did less this year than he had.
He did infinitely less, by the way.
But based on Jay Gruden's assessment of Kirk Cousins yesterday, well, look, luckily Drew Brees played a lot better because we were 7-9 the last couple of years. And, you know, obviously Drew Brees just wasn't good enough. That wasn't outstanding. We got to be better than 7-9. I don't know if he can get us by. Suddenly you get a better defense. You run the ball a little bit better. Your team gets better. That's the way football works.
Well, so if you're clapping saying, you go, Jay Gruden, you tell us the truth. Then do we have another press conference with someone who's Jay's boss to be like, we were 7-9. That we need to talk about Jay Gruden. He was just okay. You can't be happy for 7-9.
Well, I think Jay would, in fairness, tell you I wasn't good enough because he did say that at the end of the year.
Well, absolutely
based
did.
On his record.
But you see my point. When does that stop? You know, like every person
point.
Up, every boss gets to say the guy that works for me wasn't that good because we were 7-9.
And that's what I don't get either is if you're Jay Gruden, you know, I think you probably think this, I did a damn good job this year. We were 7-9, but I really held this thing together pretty well with all these injuries, right? I remember at one point mentioning to him, I'm like, dude, end of that game, you had like Tony Bergstrom blocking Jason Pierre-Paul. He's like, yeah, that's fun. That's a good time.
That's awesome.
You know? He knows. He's not stupid. Wouldn't the logic carry over to the quarterback who's trying to make moves on your offense to help you out? One phase of the game, you would think that he could just, I don't know, continue that logic and rational thinking from himself to the passer, but he didn't use it at the podium, which the word Jerry Brewer used that I like was disappointing yesterday. Our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We'll get into that. I got a brand new appliance in the kitchen that I love. It is so good.
I ran into a bit of a shebingus yesterday. Just let me do the thing I want to do. Don't create extra work.
Double play next on Grant and Danny. Great eight. We'll also cover these skins. Right now, it is time for our double play. Danny, I have a new appliance in the kitchen.
You've told me of this, and it sounds exciting.
It's really great. So we're starting to get things at the house that I haven't had before because my fiance had her bridal shower.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So there were some presents provided to her and to us at this event. One of those was an air fryer. What is your familiarity with the air fryer?
Only our conversation yesterday. I have never heard of an air fryer until yesterday.
Which shocks me because this was apparently like named the hottest gift of 2016 last year. I think it was mainly the second half of the year when they really broke out. Now, I've done some research on these. I'm not going to be able to answer all your questions, but I think I can answer some.
Okay.
The first thing I need you to know is that it's not actually a fryer. It's basically like, it's almost like a smaller conventional oven in some way. It's the way that it actually cooks. You can add some oil, but you basically just drip it onto whatever you are putting into the, in air quotes, fryer.
Fryer.
You don't have to, though. Like, you could put something in there without oil, which is why I'm saying it's not frying. Nothing is submerged in liquid. There's no enclosed capsule. There is basically like a basket, which I think is where they get the name fryer.
Because the fryer basket.
Exactly. Yeah. That you kind of throw things into this basket, then you put it on these little basically clips, and it rotates and kind of tosses whatever's in this metal basket with holes, this mesh basket, like over and over.
Right.
Some of the things that we made, we just debuted this sucker on Sunday, on New Year's Eve, during the Redskins game. Here were some of the things that we made that day for some of the people at the house. French fries were made and consumed by people allowed to have those.
Wow.
Very crunchy French fries.
Mm-hmm.
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
I love baked Brussels sprouts that are crispy. Crispy, delicious, wonderful Brussels sprouts. And Allison even made some bacon, cut it up, put that in the Brussels
sure,
sprouts.
Sure, it
as
goes
well.
Right with it, yeah.
Delicious. We also did three different types of dry rubbed wings in the air fryer as well. Basically, it seems like it's the same as like an oven, but a lot smaller so it cooks faster. I'd love someone to explain to me at some point what the big difference between the two are.
That's what I want to go with, because I just don't know how it works.
I don't necessarily know either. I'm reading it right in front of me. It says, despite the name, there's no frying going on inside your air fryer.
It's like, is it pressure?
To fry means to cook in fat, and that's not what this machine does. An air fryer is a self-contained countertop convection. I said convention. It's convection oven is the word I was thinking of. So an oven with a fan inside, but with a vertical orientation, the fan blows down from the top of the device through an electric heating element.
Oh, it's the vertical orientation.
Of course.
That's
Danny, I'm just telling you, bro. You will love this.
Let me.
You know how easy this is for me? Let me give you one more
thing.
Okay,
go ahead.
If I get home today and I want to make myself baked chicken wings, I take them out of the freezer. I dribble, if I wanted to, a little bit of oil on them. I throw them in a little dry rub, whatever I'm going to do.
Okay.
I put them on a tray into one of the racks of this little convection oven air fryer thing.
You got to say convection instead of convention.
Whatever. The air fryer. I put it in there.
Air fry.
And then I hit a button for chicken.
Okay.
25 minutes later, I take these suckers out.
There's a chicken button?
There's a chicken. There's like chicken, bacon, Brussels sprouts. There's all kinds of buttons, basically. I hit the button. It comes out, and it's delicious. I love this thing, dude. You know how you like crock pots because they're easy?
Yes.
You know how you like Hot Pockets in a microwave because they're easy?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, but it's more delicious. And you know who it's great for? Guys like you.
Guys like us.
And guys like me.
Yeah.
Who like the idea of fried foods but can't have fried foods.
I have a couple questions. One, cleaning. On the 1 to hassle scale, because right now you've got momentum. I wonder in 7 months when you're tired of like taking the pieces out and you have to scrub them, it's like actually not dishwasher friendly. Like,
yes.
It sounds like potential hassle
Still
to me.
Still honeymoon syndrome here.
Yeah.
We are in our infancy. Mm-hmm. So far, so good, though, honestly. We got a couple of these little like basket racks that are a little bit of a pain in the butt if something gets stuck in between the tiny little like mesh spokes, if you will, where you got to like scrub real bad. But I think you throw that in the dishwasher and it's fine.
And it's okay.
So far, it's like wiping out a microwave, essentially.
Second question.
Yeah.
This is the big one for me. Saucing. It sounds, all I've heard so far is a little bit of oil and some dry rub.
Yeah.
I've heard you could chop up some bacon in there. What if, hypothetical situation, someone that likes flavor, this isn't you,
correct,
but someone that wants some things that are liquid
in there.
I think
you put that right into your basket.
It just goes right in.
Absolutely.
Now, is that going to drip down to the bottom?
No, I don't think
it's a basket, right?
But the basket, I'll have to show you pictures, like the gaps are so tiny. Like there are multiple baskets you can use. You could put a metal tray in there, too.
There you go.
So why wouldn't you just put it in a little bit of a tray? Now, you can't use the same baking sheet you put in an oven. It's too big.
Of course.
But you could get a metal tray for this thing that you slide right in.
You could have a small tray turner that you could just put in there.
Exactly.
It's very quick and fast.
It would be more of a tray turner from the Carolina Panthers than tray turner from the Nationals because it's kind of bigger and it pushes people around.
Yeah.
Scott's in Manassas. What's up, Scott?
Hello, Scott.
Hello, gentlemen. How y'all doing today?
What's up, dude?
Happy New Year.
Great. Do you have an air fryer, Scott?
Well, no, I don't. Well, I'm a former chef, so I understand the concept of what you guys are dealing with. What it is, it's a mini convection oven. A convection oven is a heated oven that has a fan in it that circulates the air. Well, that's what this is, but because it's in a smaller area and you have a larger fan in a smaller area, it circulates the hot air at a quicker rate and acts as it's crisping like you could get something out of a fryer, hence the term air fryer.
Here's my question, my third and final question, and you're the expert, so I'm trusting you here. I feel like it's very risky and explodey, and we're going to have a Samsung Galaxy 7, whatever type thing, over the course of the next several years with these things, because no one's tested them out in the marketplace for long enough. I feel like we're going to have some bad things happen. I want my friend Grant Paulson to be okay. Is he in danger because of this little mini hot oven situation?
I think he's going to be fine because he hates flavor, and he's not going to put anything on any food in order to enjoy it. So with all the boring, bland food, he'll be 100% safe.
Thank you very much for your assessment.
That is good news for
you. By the way, these things are spreading like wildfire.
I know.
Nobody's having issues, although someone just gave me a great idea, by the way.
Well, those turkey fries are spreading like wildfire, and then like 1,000 houses got lit on fire.
Yeah,
California's still on fire because of one of those, I think.
You're ruining a good thing. This is just no fun, Rouye. Someone sent me this, a Nova Precision Cooker. I think this is what I think it is. Is this the Tailgate Ted bit where you cook stuff in water and it tells you when it's done? You know what I'm talking about? Like they do at restaurants?
I have no idea.
So this is how like really expensive, nice restaurants will cook mass amounts of food. For my wedding, as an example, when they're cooking chicken or meat or whatever and they got to cook 150 of them at once.
Right.
They like bag them and they cook them in hot water, basically. I forget the name for it.
Immersion circulator.
What is it?
Immersion circulator.
Okay, that could do it.
Clearly.
There's an S word. It's not souffle, but it's something like that.
It's a bus circuit.
Sous vide.
Sous vide. Thank you. Sous vide. So they cook it in hot water. It's not wet, don't worry. And then they take it out when it's done. But because of the temperature you set the water to, like you can determine in a way that you cannot when you cook something in an oven or normally, exactly what temperature it cooks to. It's amazing. And someone just sent me a picture of the one that they got for Christmas they've used every day. I might have to get this. The Anova Precision Cooker. Is this the same thing as we're talking about, Dar? What did you call it?
It's called an immersion circulator.
I'm going to get one.
And they sous vide everything.
Sous vide. Thank you.
Just constantly sous vide stuff.
So basically, let's say you want, is pork cooked like 160, something like that?
That sounds right to me, yeah.
Let's say you get like this pork roast, right?
Like a pork tenderloin kind of thing.
You put it in like whatever, I'm picturing a bag, but I don't know if that's what you put it in.
Yeah.
You drop it into this water and you just set the water at 165 or until it gets to 165, whatever. It'll stay there until the end of time, basically. Like you take this thing out an hour later and it's still 165. It just cooked perfectly. I might have some of the details wrong.
That sounds pretty incredible.
Pretty much what this is.
Dar's looking at you a little bit puzzled. Does that sound right to you, Dar?
Some of the details are not right, but I've generally got this correct.
It's like 80% of the way there, which is 80% higher than I thought it would be.
I don't know much about sous vide-ing. I don't know that.
Do you really not know about sous vide?
I really have no file.
This is the hot noise. This is what everyone's doing.
How do you
doing.
Watch as much like Food Network and you've never seen sous vide anything?
I probably have seen it, but that word sounds new to me.
So when you go to a nice restaurant right now, I guarantee you probably three of the last five great meals you've had were sous vide.
In some form or fashion?
Absolutely. Like meats, steak, stuff like that. Restaurants are doing this a lot.
People
now.
Just sous vide all the time?
Someone who's at a nice restaurant, call me. Or tweet me, actually. That's better. At Grant H. Paulson and tell me if I'm right about this. I also might be wrong about it, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about it. Grant and Danny on the Fan, the Beltway Blitz next at noon.
I don't put steak in water usually. I'm a grill guy, but listen, if you want to sous vide your way through life, you can sous vide your way through life. You can sous vide your butt all the way to Ted Britt Ford, people. Fairfax Chantilly, just click away at tedbritt.com. SUV, that's another name for SUV. Go get a great deal on one of those bad Jacksons at Ted Britt Ford. I got one. We got the Ford Edge, 2016 Ford Edge. Love that ride. Got a 2017 Ford Fusion as well. That's right. The Hoorays are a two Ted Britt family. Love them. Here's what they do. They get you a great car at a great price. Pretty novel, right? There are some other dealerships that might be able to almost compete in that way, but here's where Ted Britt Ford will earn your business. Ted Britt for life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. Here's their philosophy. It's pretty simple. Do more than the other guy. Have a better car, better price, and better service than the other guy. That's how they know they will earn your business. They've been doing it for almost 60 years, people. That's how. Ted Britt for life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. New pre-owned vehicles. Anything less than 100,000 miles, you get the powertrain. That's the big stuff. Little stuff. Virginia State Inspection. They'll replace your battery once every 4 years. They just want to take care of you to make you happy. They know the best way to get you to come back. Pretty simple, right? Go see him at Ted Britt Ford and tell him to be you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.